Hi, this is Rini Primeza, the Jersey Dog Trainer, telling you to stay tuned to WNJC 1360 AM for Thursday in the Doghouse, coming right up.
Mama was a mutt, Daddy was one too. Me, I'm a little bit of everything, everything that I use. One day I'm walking down my block.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Thursday in the Doghouse. I'm your host, Karen Fazio, the Dog Super Nanny, and today we're going to be talking about dog-on-dog aggression. This is when your dog gets into fights with other dogs on walks and dog parks and so on and so forth. Thursday in the Doghouse comes live to you every Thursday morning from 10 to 10:30 right here on WNJC 1360 AM. I'm a professional dog trainer, and my co-host, Rini Primeza, is a professional dog trainer and certified behavioral consultant. She's unable to join me today, but every day we're out meeting dogs and their pet parents, and we're here to give you tips on how you can make your lives better, how to improve your dog's health, behavior, and so on. I'm going to take a quick break right now because I'd like to share with you some of the services that I offer in central New Jersey and in the Keyport area of New Jersey. And when we return, we're going to start discussing dog-on-dog aggression.
Are you the owner of a fearful or aggressive dog and don't know where to turn? Have you called other trainers and they've turned you down because they don't want to deal with an aggression case? Then My Best Friend Dog Training and its special service, the Dog Super Nanny, is maybe just what you're looking for. We do in-home private consultations. We're located in Keyport, New Jersey, and we do travel. Our phone number is 732-533-9376, and our website is mybestfrienddogschool.com. We are positive-based trainers and don't use physical punishment or fear as a way to motivate your dog. We use games and fun as a way to do that, and we also help you during the whole process. So give us a call. We're here for you. 732-533-9376.
Everyone, and welcome back to Thursday in the Doghouse. I'm your host, Karen Fazio, the Dog Super Nanny. And this morning, I'm going to be discussing dog-on-dog aggression, which I term DDA. Dog-on-dog aggression is one of the most common problems that pet owners have. You take your dog out on a walk, you go to a dog park, you know, the dog greets another dog happily, and before you know it, they're trying to kill each other, or at least it seems that way. And I want to kind of take some of the myths out of here and try to make some sense of this behavior for you so that if you do have this kind of issue, you'll kind of know a little bit more how to deal with it, a little bit more effectively, and how to get qualified help for it. You know, when we see a dog fight happening, it's really scary. It's violent. It's loud. It seems like the two dogs are trying to kill each other. And if you're an owner of one of these dogs, you know, you have all the experience to know what it feels like when you're taking your dog out for a walk. I mean, just doing that could be traumatic for you. And you know, while it might seem like these dogs are trying to kill each other, you know, most often these fights are nothing more than loud displays of aggressive posturing and growling, and they rarely ever really result in serious injuries. When wounds are sustained, you know, the resulting injury usually is a lip or an ear tear, a puncture wound to the neck or the shoulders. But, you know, if one dog is really intending to kill another, you know, its actions are really swift, and death can occur in 15 seconds or less. And attacks that are intended to kill often are directed at the victim's stomach or behind the head in an effort to sever the spinal column, not necessarily in areas around the face or the shoulders. So if you have a dog that's dog aggressive, the first step in any treatment plan would be to report the behavior to your veterinarian so they could rule out any medical issue. If none exists, you know, I recommend that you consult with a veterinarian behaviorist or a professional dog trainer especially one that has experience in these issues, because not all of them do, or somebody like Reenie, who is a certified behavior consultant. Those are the people that you'd want to call. But first I want to talk about, you know, assessing injuries. You know, when you look at it, I mean, an average dog weighing 70 pounds or more has the ability to crush bone. Not make it just bite, but crush bone, with a jaw that could deliver over 700 pounds of pressure per square inch. And breeds such as the German Shepherd, the Rotties, Pits, they could do it in excess of 700 pounds. You know, when you're armed with that kind of knowledge, it's a little bit more, you know, it's a little bit more comforting to know that even deep tears to the face and the neck or shoulder aren't really considered to be life-threatening, or those indicative of a dog that intended to kill. However, you know, any injury should be considered serious enough that you should get qualified help right away. When left to their own devices, most fights usually, especially those among males, will end with a clear victor and loser. The loser will walk away and avoid future conflicts with the victor. In most cases, the victor allows the loser to retreat. It's not necessarily true in cases of female-on-female aggression, which should really be closely monitored and taken very seriously, since females have been known to kill one another. So if you have a female-on-female aggression case in your house, or you know, usually female-on-female aggression cases, the females fight with a female that they know. However, you know, they can fight with other females. But, you know, that's very important, and you really need to get help for any of these cases right away, but even more so with a female. And I want to kind of go into this whole neutering debate. You know, dog-on-dog aggression is more common among males. We could term that intermale aggression. However, females fight too, although it's less common. The difference between the two sexes is that altercations among males usually is nothing more than a loud aggressive display, and hardly anyone really gets seriously injured. I'm not saying that injuries don't happen, but they're very rarely very serious. Females, on the other hand, may fight to the death, and this is particularly true if the two have a history of fighting with each other. Regarding contributing factors, there are many. The most common type of altercation is neutered males displaying aggression toward intact males. And regardless of how friendly an intact male may be, non-neutered males are aware that these dogs retain the ability to mate. And the scent is a dead giveaway, and many neutered males will react negatively around them. Since intact males also smell differently, you know, they smell male, neutered males will smell more like females. So, you know, if your dog is neutered, it can help the situation. But the scent alone of an intact male can cause tensions to rise even before the two dogs even engage one another. While neutering isn't, you know, known to affect behavior, personality, it can have a profound impact on the way that neutered males perceive their intact counterparts. On the medical side, there are many benefits, such as a longer lifespan, because neutering may help to reduce the risk of some cancers, particularly testicular cancer, mammary cancer, that's among males and females, and pyometra, which is a life-threatening uterine infection in females. So now we're going to go into the causes, the most common causes of this form of aggression. Most dogs squabble over valued resources such as food, territory, water, and for mating rights. Altercations among males is more common when females are part of the mix. In all male groups, males fight less if females are not there. This holds true in most species, including lab mice and rats. They've done studies on this. Another common cause inappropriate social interaction is not having appropriate social interaction with members of its own species during the puppy socialization period, you know, all the way through its first years of life. But, you know, from birth to like 12 weeks of age, if these puppies are not socialized with, you know, mature dogs and gentle dogs, we always want their interactions with these dogs to be positive. So that during puppyhood, if they meet females, males, big dogs, little dogs, white dogs, all these kinds of animals, and they have good experiences with them, you have a better chance of not having this develop. Inappropriate play, specifically at dog parks and so on and so forth, during early puppyhood and adolescence also plays a huge role. Rough play and over the top adolescents and adult dogs, even at the hands of humans, may contribute toward elevated levels of stress and hyperactivity and can affect the dog's nervous system for the rest of its life. Rough play has also been blamed for play deficits. This play deficit is a term coined by behaviorists such as Gene Donaldson, who is very experienced in this issue. But, you know, regarding stress levels of the dog, you know, this compelling scientific evidence that adverse social experiences and those resulting stress levels can cause permanent damage to the neuroconnectors in the brain, and particularly in the hippocampus, which is the area responsible for storing good and bad memories. And this damage also negatively affects the learning process. So, you know, to avoid these kinds of things, you really want to socialize the dog early in life, make sure it's neutered, and try to provide it with as many positive experiences as you can around other dogs. You know, also, you know, if the dog is punished around other dogs, if an owner is harshly correcting their dog around other dogs, that too can cause dog-on-dog aggression, because the dog's probably not really understanding why it's getting punished, and, you know, it's in the presence of other dogs, and that could affect it too. You know, when we're talking about these kinds of things, we really want to stress prevention. And when I work on one of these cases, you know, I take a lot of history to narrow down, you know, what the possible causes and triggers may be, and, you know, to try to reveal exactly when and where the behavior started, because it's helpful for trainers to know this, because training success sometimes is dependent on how long the dog is, you know, has been suffering from this, you know, or at least it's influenced by it. But no matter how compelling a dog's history may be, you know, the important task is changing the dog's behavior going forward. And on that end, management plays a key role in this training process. So, you know, the first step would be the owner should really try to make every effort to prevent future fights from occurring. I mean, don't even have the dog interact with other dogs. I mean, they could walk past other dogs and see them, but really try to avoid these fights, because each one just kind of compounds the problem. I want to talk about, too, the environment. And the environment plays a big role. Environmental triggers or antecedents, they play a big role in how the dog reacts. For example, if most fights occurred while on leash, you know, anxiety or hyperactivity may begin building the minute you pick up the leash. And often, this hyperactivity is misinterpreted as happiness or excitement, you know, when the dog is actually experiencing a tremendous amount of stress. So, you know, such, you know, excitement or, you know, hyper behavior can easily teeter over into aggression rather quickly. You know, a good example is two of these, you know, hyperactive dogs playing in a dog park, and they chase each other to the point of exhaustion or roll each other and engage in over-the-top dominance rituals. Often these are the two dogs that end up in a squabble at some point during the day. I want to talk about, well, you know what, I think we're going to take a quick break in about 2 minutes, but I do want to continue talking about generalizing. Generalizing, you know, if a dog's level of aggression has been escalating over time toward a particular size or color of dog, you may start to see that start to bleed out to other breeds, and there's a pretty good chance that the dog has begun to generalize its fears. Now, while dogs are very poor generalizers when it comes to figuring out what we want from the dog, you know, like we put a high value on a sweater, and, you know, a young puppy, you know, will grab the sweater and play tug of war with it. We're thinking, oh, my God, I spent $80 on this sweater, and the dog is just thinking, oh, wow, this is a fun toy to tug on. So, you know, they don't generalize very well. But when fear is part of that, they do generalize very well. And what happens is, like, let me give you an example. A dog that was bitten by a small white dog during adolescence may begin to react, like when it's about 3 years old or even a year, maybe start reacting to blowing white bags in the street, you know, those little shopping bags you see. And similarly, you know, one who experienced multiple encounters on a leash may begin to show aggression or hyperactivity or fear toward, you know, somebody pushing a stroller or other moving object that seems to be connected to a human by a tether. It's a handlebar or whatever, but, it, you know, for all intents and purposes, it looks like a leash. So these dogs could get very excited. When we come back, I want to talk about setting goals, learning dog body language, being mindful of your own body language, and I want to talk about this whole pack mentality myth that's been circulating for a long time. But right now we're going to take a quick break because I'm going to have my co-host, Rini Permeza, tell you what kind of services that she offers in the South Jersey area as a certified behavior consultant.
Is your dog always in the doghouse? Does he greet people by jumping all over them? Does she chew your shoes and steal your undies? Guess what? Your dog needs training. Hi, I'm Rini Premeza, the Jersey Dog Trainer, and I train dogs using only positive-based methods. My services include private training right in your own home. I also offer group puppy kindergarten classes starting at 8 weeks of age, and group classes for adolescent and adult dogs beginning at 5 months of age. All group classes are held at Dog Days Camp for Canines, 23 West Main Street, Marlton, New Jersey. For more information, please contact me at 609-280-9338 or on the web at www.jerseydogtrainer.com. Again, that's 609-280-9338 or on the web at www.jerseydogtrainer.com.
Welcome back to Thursday in the Doghouse. This is Karen Fazio, the dog super nanny. Today we're discussing dog-on-dog aggression. If any of you out there have any questions and you need them answered today, I would love to hear from you. The phone number here is 856-232-7077. So if you have any questions, if your dog has gotten into a fight with other dogs in the neighborhood and you're having a very difficult time understanding the behavior, feel free to call and I'll try to make sense of it for you. Earlier in the show when I was first, you know, before we took a break actually, we were talking about generalizing. And we know that, you know, a dog that's gotten into fights with other dogs can, you know, starts to bleed out into other breeds. But, you know, similarly, you know, if your dog had a fight, say, like at a specific place in your neighborhood or a couple of fights there, you know, whenever you walk past that area, whether or not the dog is, you know, around other dogs or not, the dog may start to get excited. But I think that, you know, a big role in managing the dog's behavior and preventing future fights is learning how to read your dog's body language. There's some really good books out there on how to read dog body language and understand what they do, because they do offer a lot of signals. You know, many of them are quite silent. They sniff the ground, they turn their head away, you know, the tail might go up over the back. I mean, there's a lot of things that a dog does, you know, before it starts engaging in the lunging and the barking and everything. And I want to give you a couple of authors that you can look up online and purchase their books. And almost every one of their books has some really good information on body language. One is Stanley Coran, Dr. Patricia McConnell, Turid Rugas, let me spell that for you, Turidrugas, and Roger Abrantes. But, you know, you want to learn your dog's body language because your dog is going to be sending you lots of signals that it's getting nervous, way before he starts to get into, you know, close proximity to other dogs. But, you know, you also have to pay attention to your own body language. I mean, you know, when you step outside the house, do you start getting tense? Or if you start seeing, if you see another dog walking towards you, you know, when you're walking your dog, do you start to tense up on the leash? You know, if your dog starts to get agitated and move around, are you yelling at your dog? You know, these are the kinds of things that influence and actually exacerbate the behavior. But, you know, I want to talk about leadership, and, you know, this is a big problem of mine. I have an issue with this whole pack mentality term, you know, and there's many people out there, and including, you know, trainers and animal enthusiasts have played a great emphasis on this pack leadership and pack mentality. You know, in order to truly understand what such terms mean, we must really first to learn a little bit about canine social structures as it pertains to our dogs. As a general rule, domestic dogs and even feral dogs don't have complex social structures or hierarchies, such as those observed in their wolf cousins. Actually, in observations of free-roaming dogs, particularly in a 1989 study, Daniels and Beckoff, of 154 free-roaming dogs in Newark, New Jersey, compelling evidence, you know, supported the hypothesis that even free-roaming dogs lack organized or complex social structures, or what some may term pack mentality. The term pack mentality is an impressive term, but it's also quite vague. And the term has nothing to do with humans. I'm waiting for a study involving feral humans and dogs to be published. When that scientific paper is available, perhaps we can use the term pack mentality to describe, you know, how dogs view their relationship with their pack humans. The word mentality literally means character or disposition. So when someone uses the term pack mentality to describe, you know, how the dog interacts with humans, the term lacks any observational information pertaining to actual leadership skills and everything to do with the overall emotional state of the group of dogs. In my opinion, the term pack mentality is an impressive, colorful, and an imaginative term, but it lacks scientific evidence it even exists. I think what such individuals may be trying to convey, and rather poorly, is the concept of leadership, which has nothing at all to do with pack mentality, which means disposition of character. You know, recently a woman asked me how she could go about teaching a dog that her baby is the pack leader. I'm thinking, dogs don't have complex, you know, structures. The child isn't a dog, doesn't look like a dog, doesn't smell like a dog, doesn't act like a dog, doesn't play like a dog, communicate like a dog, and doesn't compete for the same resources as a dog. So, you know, I asked her to show me how she was going about trying to achieve this pack leadership, and she went and poked the dog in the neck for no reason. The dog was just standing there doing not being a good dog. You know, and she and countless others have been misled into thinking that humans must act like dogs or use scary tactics in order to convey the concept of leadership. Complete hogwash. Dogs respond to the individual who controls the good stuff, such as treat, foods, toys, period. If you're looking to establish what we call leadership, you can easily do so by controlling valued resources, having your dog work for them, which is reward-based training. Also, you establish leadership by setting up boundaries and rules. You know, when you control the good stuff, your dog will look to you for what happens next. Some may call this leadership. I call it a smart dog who learns how to get the good stuff, usually with the least bit of energy output. You know, but this leadership also, you know, extends inside the house. But the biggest part is when you leave the house. You know, what does a leader do? I mean, if you really want to be a leader, you really want to talk about this whole leadership thing. You know, a leader protects people. A leader makes good decisions. A leader, you know, even like in the army or, you know, in the armed forces, a leader doesn't, you know, rush his men into battle and they're just going to get killed. You know, they know when to retreat. They know when to hunker down and wait for the danger to pass. And they know when they should go out and confront something. So, you know, as an owner, you really need to start making decisions on what is the best protective, what is your protective abilities for your dog? If your dog is afraid of other dogs or gets into fight with other dogs, then avoid it. Don't have your dog interact with others. There's plenty of time for that. Once you get a good trainer They can help you set goals. They can help you set short-term goals, mid-term goals, and long-term goals. If you have a dog that's dog aggressive and your goal is you want your dog to play freely off-leash with other dogs, it could take 2 to 3 years. It could take the whole dog's life. Or he may never be able to reach that goal. You know, but if your goal is, you know, my dog goes hysterical whenever he passes another dog on a leash, you know, maybe he can't do it when the dog is in the same street as him, but maybe he could do it a block away. You know, and over time, you could start to decrease that distance until your dog can walk calmly next to somebody else, another dog. So, you know, your trainer will help you set the dog's threshold, which is the point of reactivity, but the point where your dog starts lunging and carrying on the leash. And what they're going to do is they're going to take that a few steps back. So they never quite reach that point with the dog. And they're going to build tolerance, and they're going to build positive experiences with other dogs. And over time, they'll decrease that distance. So that's one type of training that good trainers will use. And, you know, they may choose several techniques to work with your dog, you know, especially if they have experience with stress dogs. They're going to rely on classical conditioning, which is pairing, you know, making the dog feel a little bit more positive to something that they've once feared before. You know, a perfect example is, you know, you're afraid of spiders. You know, you watch a spider movie eating an ice cream sundae. You know, all of a sudden it's not that bad. But I do want to tell you that, you know, if you do have aggressive dog, most likely its foundations are based in fear. Most aggression is. You really want to avoid the harsh corrections and yanks and prong collars and things like that, because really it's going to make it worse. You may think that it's getting better, because if you do use these products and types of training on your dog, you're going to say, oh, my dog, you know, I just give it one swift correction, he could walk right past that other dog. But I challenge that person to walk the dog with a normal collar. It's not going to happen. So you always have to use these products. And, I mean, come on, your dog's already afraid of other dogs. Why would you make it worse? You're a psychopath. We don't want to be a psychopath. We want to be a good leader. You know, if you're afraid, let's walk the other way. You know, we wouldn't put our three-year-old children in the face of fear if there's something that they're frightened of. You know, we'll help them avoid it, and I think that we need to do that, too, with our dogs. Trying to think if I didn't cover everything here, but I think I did. I want to talk about some helpful tips, some helpful tips to help you along in this process. The first thing you should do is find yourself a qualified trainer. You can find a qualified trainer if you go to the APDT website. That's the Association of Pet Dog Trainers, and it's the A as in Apple, P as in Peter, D as in David, T as in Thomas.com. You click on the trainer search tab. You put in your zip code, and up will come a whole bunch of trainers in your area, hopefully, if you don't live in a very rural place where there aren't any. But even so, most trainers would be willing to travel a little bit to get to you. But, you know, the key to success in helping a dog that's dog aggressive is multifaceted and include your ability to read canine body language, keeping that dog below its threshold, actively practicing avoidance techniques, you know, like such as walking away. One of the great techniques that I love, and I'm running out of time, I only got 2 minutes to the show, it seems like it went so fast, that I'm totally in love with is called Behavior Adjustment Training, BAT, which was pioneered by Grecia Stewart, I think it was in 2009, and BAT, which stands for Behavior Adjustment Training, relies on retreat and avoidance of scary things as a reward when a dog offers calming and cutoff signals. And those signals will be available to you in, you know, dog body language books and books by those authors, such as ground sniffing, head turns, and so on and so forth. You know, before you engage in any program, it's vital to rely on an experienced professional for advice and guidance so you don't make mistakes that can cause the dog to get worse. And you should contact a veterinary behaviorist or an individual, a trainer that understands the science of learning. I think that's it for our show today, folks. I want to thank you for joining me on at Thursdays in the Doghouse. Next week we'll be back with my co-host Rini Permeza, and I believe that we have an author coming on. And I think that I'm going to kind of keep it a little bit of a secret. We're going to have a good time. But again, if you have any questions and you'd like to join us, you know, give us a call during our show between 10 and 10:30 on Thursdays, you could do so by calling 856-232-7077. Thank you guys and have a great weekend.
I'm glad you're home.